we'll stick together.
Ticklish Business, the podcast devoted to honoring and deconstructing the world of classic cinema. As always, I'm your host, Kristen Lopez. In this week's special bonus episode, I'm joined by mother-daughter duo Colleen and Nora Fiore to discuss our top three favorite films starring Maureen O'Hara.
Do you know what a gift you've given us by being here and letting us show you how much we respect you and your work that you did and who you are and what you are and how you've lived? So we thank you for coming here and letting us show you our affection for you.
Well, don't be fooled into thinking that I do magical things.
But you kind of do. You've done magical things up there on the screen.
No, yes, you I have. Don't.
Born Maureen Fitzsimons on August 17th, 1920, the woman who would be known as Maureen O'Hara grew up in the Dublin suburb of Ranelagh. The second of six children and the only redhead in the family, Maureen's parents were considered eccentric. Her mother, Marguerite, was a woman's clothier and cited as the most beautiful woman in the whole of Ireland. Maureen claimed when her mother left the house that men would come outside just to watch her walk down the street. Known as the baby elephant in the family for her pudginess, Maureen was an active child who fished and rode horses, an early education for the types of characters she'd play on the big screen. She said she envied that boys were allowed to do things that girls couldn't, including get dirty and generally mess around. At the age of five, a gypsy claimed Maureen would be rich and famous, and it wasn't long before she joined the theater and graduated from the prestigious Guildhall School of Music at the age of 14, their youngest pupil to do so.
Walter Pidgeon has his most distinguished role as Mr. Griffin, the minister who sacrifices his great love for Maureen O'Hara as Anne Horan, the Welsh girl whose beauty set songs swelling in men's throats. They knew the surging ecstasy of breathtaking love, and together they lifted their voices in heart-swelling song.
At 17, Maureen went on to her first screen test for Elstree Studios. Swathed in makeup and gold lame, she considered the endeavor a disaster. Charles Laughton saw the test, and underneath all the glitz, he saw an actress's talent. He offered her a 7-year contract through his studio and started putting her in films. In 1939, she got her big break, playing an innkeeper's niece in the Alfred Hitchcock film Jamaica Inn. She received good reviews in spite of critics' feelings towards one of Hitch's weaker efforts, and the film secured her the role of Esmeralda in The Hunchback of Notre Dame, a physically demanding process where O'Hara ended up doing her own stunts. Laughton sold her contract once World War II broke out in England, and after some middling fare, she tackled the character she's best remembered for, Anharad, in John Ford's 1941 drama How Green Was My Valley. The film was nominated for 5 Academy Awards, but unfortunately, O'Hara wasn't recognized, and cemented a 5-film collaboration between O'Hara and director John Ford.
I'd like to tell you about The Quiet Man. He's John Wayne in a picture you'll soon be cheering. It's the story of Sean Thornton, a right-handed man who came from America to forget his past in Innisfree. There he met a fiery red-headed lass, and the village marriage broker went to work.
That's a pretty bonnet you have on.
Bonnet? Don't you be talking to me about bonnets. After leaving mine stuck up there like a...
Easy now. Have the good manners not to hit the man until he's your husband and entitled to hit you back.
The arrival of Technicolor was a boon for O'Hara's career, and her red hair and fair skin cemented her status as the queen of Technicolor. Despite classic film fans' appreciation of her work in this period, O'Hara felt the moniker actually did a disservice to her career, leaving people to focus on her looks instead of her talent. She did her fair share of projects during this time period, and for every film she did do, she turned down 3 others. Roles she rejected include 1946's The Razor's Edge and the 1948 Bob Hope comedy The Pale Face. She was often critical of the role she starred in, being unafraid to call something ridiculous or outright trash. She found herself freest working with John Ford, and in 1952, she returned to her beloved Ireland to work with him and John Wayne on The Quiet Man. The film was a critical and commercial success, and O'Hara's, quote, personal favorite of all the pictures I have made. It's the one I'm most proud of.
The screen hasn't seen such a rip-roaring, no-holds-barred Donnybrook in years. And you haven't ever seen so much wild, frantic fun. as John Wayne, as the immovable G.W. McClintock, clashes head-on with an irresistible firebrand of a redhead named Maureen O'Hara.
As she got older, O'Hara would step away from the action films she used to do, at the risk of her health and safety. Music, though, was always a passion, fostered by her mother, who was a singer, so the actress started recording and releasing music. She continued to work steadily in film, though, including returning in 1971 to star opposite collaborator John Wayne in Big Jake, but the changes Hollywood underwent during the late 60s into the early 70s unsettled her. She didn't like studios turning to what she considered, quote, dirty pictures, and retired in 1972. She would return to film in 1991, starring opposite John Candy in Only the Lonely, and dabbled in TV movies until about 2000. When Maureen O'Hara died of natural causes at the age of 95 on October 24th of 2015, it was the culmination of a full and uncompromising life. Quote, Ireland's first Hollywood superstar, as biographer Aubrey Malone says, was a tough woman who refused to let others stifle her voice or creative freedom. She could be demanding and harsh, but as everyone who ever worked with her said, she was the best of the lot. After a quick break, I'll be back with special guests Colleen and Nora Fiore as we run down our top three favorite Maureen O'Hara films.
I come to the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear
talking with two lovely ladies this week, the mother-daughter duo of First for Ticklish Business of Colleen and Nora Fiore. How are you, ladies?
Fine. How are you, Kristen?
I am great. We've had Nora, if you listened to, I think, episode 2 of the podcast, we had Nora as one of our first guests, but this time we have her and her mom, which is wonderful, talking about the lovely redhead Maureen O'Hara. Colleen, since you are new to the show, why don't you tell the listeners a bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm Colleen Fiore. As you said, I'm Nora's mom, the Nitrate Diva's mom. It's what my claim to fame. I love classic movies because my husband got me into them when we first met. And Nora, as a byproduct of our relationship, has been in love with classic movies and has kept me going to film festivals and really enjoying classic movies.
Well, and Nora, we'll update everybody on the Nitrate Divas happenings at the end, but how are things with you?
Everything's going really great with me. I'm still doing what I love doing, talking about classic movies on social media, making gifts, and I'm actually really excited because this weekend I'm heading to a festival of rare classic movies called Capital Fest. I try to, whenever possible, make those small, rare film festivals.
That's right. You guys are world travelers. You came back from Europe recently.
Yes, we were just in Paris for a month, which was a lot of fun. Saw a lot of good movies there. What are some of our favorite venues, Mom?
Well, we went to an all-silent theater called You Can Do the French for Me.
It's the Fondation Jérôme Sédoux Pathé, or you can just search the Pathé Foundation in Paris. And it's fantastic. Museum with a screening room that shows mostly silent films, all with live accompaniment by these really fantastic pianists from a local school.
Yeah, it's just a great place, especially in the summer in Paris, it can get really hot, and it's just a great place to go in the be cooled off and just go back in time and see these great films with the live accompaniment. It's great. It makes me sad. It's the one thing that I miss the most. Besides the food, okay, from Paris. But yes, we spent a lot of time in theaters in Paris. I think most people think that's weird, but you would get it, I think, Kristen.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny that you guys are on just after I did a whole episode on An American in Paris, where me and Debbie Elias talked about how Gene Kelly couldn't film in Paris. And I have two ladies who are, I consider you guys Francophiles. It's a nice little twist of irony on the show.
We think of Gene Kelly when we're there, especially, you know, when we're up in the section of Montmartre, you know, where he's supposed to be painting and all, where we start singing and dancing and pretending we're in that movie.
Where's Gene Kelly in his skin tight suit? Yes. We're always wondering.
Exactly. But of course, we're not talking about Gene Kelly today, unfortunately. We are talking about the lovely titian-haired Maureen O'Hara, who everybody should love. If you haven't seen any of her movies, we are going to give you a great overview of her career. And we're going to do this much like our usual top threes, round robin style, with some honorable mentions. And I'm going to let Colleen go first because she is new. Before we get into the top threes, what is it about Maureen O'Hara? You guys actually suggested that we do a top three about her. What is it about her career and her personality that is so appealing to you?
Well, first of all, I'm named Colleen. My maiden name is O'Brien. I'm Irish to the core, and I grew up watching The Quiet Man every St. Patty's Day since I was, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper, as they say. And she's always that strong female character she plays in The Quiet Man has stuck with me and has been definitely formative influence on my personality. And I just have loved her since seeing that movie as a child. And of course, I also saw many of her movies as a child, but that one, particularly with the Ireland connection, I love her strong female portrayals, her red hair, her very Irish accent. I feel like she's like a member of my family. I wish she were.
And Nora, what about you?
Well, you know, it's funny. My mom says that Maureen O'Hara was such a strong influence on her personality because I concur. There's certain movie stars who you just fuse in your mind with people you know. And for my mother, she's sort of like real life. Maureen O'Hara was real life, but she's kind of the Maureen O'Hara in my life. She is, you know, a very elegant, lovely lady, but she's also never afraid to give you a stern talking to when she thinks you need it. I respect that. I respect her dignity she always brought to roles, and yet also her knockabout tomboyishness is also a really interesting combination. You know, she has this angelic appearance and demeanor, and yet that can so easily slip right into, you know, fisticuffs with any dude who's trying to get fresh with her. So
I'll kick your butt.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think you guys hit a lot of the topics that I was going to say when describing her. There's an earthiness and a groundedness to her characterization. You look at someone like Marilyn Monroe, we all love Marilyn, but she's one of those personalities that you really don't think exists in nature, or at least in something passing for reality, even though she was a real person. That persona is what's evident. Whereas Maureen O'Hara, you believe that what is on screen is who she is. She's brassy. She doesn't take any guff. She's one of the best mother figures, which I love that you guys brought up, especially the similarities to Colleen. The maternity of Maureen O'Hara's characterization is really interesting because she's not a Joan Crawford, obviously, but she's not really a Barbara Stanwyck when she played mother roles. There's not a coldness to her, this need for perfection. She is who she is. And that's probably not the best description a lot of people are looking for when they talk about old Hollywood, because we want something magical and otherworldly. But I think being genuine and authentic is what sets Maureen O'Hara apart from a lot of other actresses. And I also think it's what might get a lot of people to forget her. People brought up some of the top stars from the golden era. I don't know if she would be in the top 10 because I think people forget.
Well, one thing I really love about Maureen O'Hara is that she does have that kind of paradoxical quality where she feels very real, but she is also ethereal and otherworldly. I think another reason why she might not be as well known today as some of the other personalities of the era is because she really didn't showboat. You see her in a movie like How Green Is My Valley, and she does her parts beautifully, but she was not trying to upstage the other actors. She really worked very well with other actors, was never one to kind of seize unduly her parts. I mean, some actors do that and it's magic, but you kind of wonder, like, were their co-stars gone? Oh, gee, there they go again. I get the feeling that Maureen O'Hara, while she held her own beautifully, was never trying to take up too much space, never trying to hog the spotlight, which I think makes her performances all the more subtle and feel very modern in that sense.
Right. And we are going to be looking at some roles where she has worked against some serious heavy hitters. And it's funny that, not to throw sexism in there, but the dudes tend to get more recognition sometimes than the ladies. But that's why we have this show, and we can talk about some of her finest work. So let's dive into our number three. Colleen, why don't you start us off with your number three film?
Boy, it was so hard to just pick three and to rank them even harder. The Hunchback of Notre Dame is definitely my top three. I put it at three. That movie has so much appeal to me because I am a Francophile. I have stood and gazed at Notre Dame more time than I would care to admit. The whole story of the Hunchback of Notre Dame, which I read as a young teen and was attached to it. And then to see the movie and to see Maureen O'Hara play the young Esmeralda so magically, so touchingly, and you just can't even imagine the, Charles Laughton's character so heartbreaking, and to see Maureen O'Hara treat him with such tenderness and love. I might start crying just talking about it. It's a fabulous, fabulous performance. I'm a teacher of special ed students, and I'm always for the underdog. My heart breaks for the Hunchback, and I feel like my personality infuses once again with Maureen O'Hara's character in that, and her portrayal of that kindness and tenderness she shows to someone who's having a tough time. I love the way she plays that part. It's amazing. And she's so young and so inexperienced at that point, and she just delivers. She gives us top performance. It's great.
And the stunts, the fact that she really was being held aloft by a stuntman over hundreds of feet above. You know, if he'd slipped, she would have been a goner. She always had that physical courage that goes hand in hand with her moral courage.
Colleen gets kudos for actually having read The Hunchback of Notre Dame, because I've tried and I can't get into it. I don't know why. The movie versions, I think, the 39 version, I think, does the best job. The Disney version, I have issues with. But you guys are spot on. I mean, that role is so vibrant in a movie that is very grim and very dark, but at the same time has some hope to it, which is so necessary so that you're not depressed. I know somebody was going to do it, so I didn't put it on my list, but I'm glad it's already been thrown out there. Nora, what is your number three?
Mine is a bit more of a fluff movie.
Don't worry, we're all about fluff.
It's more of a guilty pleasure, I guess, because I think Maureen O'Hara had more active, assertive roles in other pirate movies, but The Black Swan was one of those first classic pirate movies I ever saw from Hollywood's golden era. And I found it so enchanting. The color cinematography by the great Leon Shamroy is beautiful. And Maureen O'Hara is doing what I think she does best. She's that sassy, strong-willed, upper-class lady. Seemed to play a lot of these society women roles, but who also were not afraid to stick it to people and trespass the bonds of propriety when she thought it was necessary. I love her in that role. I love her chemistry with Tyrone Power. You know, there are some really funny stories about how she and he would always be sneaking off the set to go and get ice cream, and, you know, they'd be late, but they were movie stars, so they could get away with that and kind of cover for each other. So they have really fun chemistry in that movie. It's just, it is such a visual feast for the eyes. It's got some really weird casting, like George Sanders as this red beard gruff pirate. Whose decision was that? But Maureen O'Hara is perfectly cast. She's just fabulous in it. She's feisty and, you know, everything you could hope for in an adventure movie heroine.
I'm glad you brought this. This almost made my number three, because this movie, and I'm not big on pirate movies, but this and Captain Blood are the two that I always bring up as my favorite. This one just embraces pure fun and whimsy. It's got that Oscar-winning color. It looks great. You hit it on the head when you said there are some questionable casting decisions. Not only do you have George Sanders, but you have Laird Krieger in here, who is always fun to see, like a more grandiose Vincent Price. Tyrone Power spends an inordinate amount of time without a shirt on, and he's covered in what looks like brown paint. I mean, there are some questionable decisions. It's a pirate movie of the 1940s, so you have to deal with it, but it's so fun. And you're right that Tyrone Power and Maureen O'Hara have some great chemistry. They just look like they are having the time of their lives. So I'm glad that you included this, because it's one that needs to be seen. Fox put out a Blu-ray a couple of years ago that looks beautiful. So if you have not seen the Blu-ray version of it, you should definitely watch that. I'm also sticking to 1940. I'm doing the Dorothy Arzner film Dance Girl Dance. This was a new film for me. I had not seen it before, but I know so many people who had recommended it, because Dorothy Arzner is considered a landmark female director of the golden era. And Maureen O'Hara plays this very nice Irish girl, Judy O'Brien. She's an aspiring ballerina in a dance troupe. She's got to deal with this brashy cabaret singer, appropriately named Bubbles, played by Lucille Ball. There's a lot of other elements that go into the movie, other than the fact that it's a dance film, which I love, is that even though Maureen O'Hara's character and Lucille Ball are supposed to be adversaries, they have this tenuous friendship because they both understand that they're women in a very competitive field, and they both acknowledge that they have different talents and that they're not really in competition with each other, but they are. I love that. I love how the script actually attempts to humanize these women, especially in an entertainment world where you would expect them to be at each other's throats. Two redheads for the price of one in this movie. I don't know who I adore more. Maureen O'Hara is so sweet and winsome and likable. And then you have Lucille Ball in contrast, who is very loud and straightforward and knows what she wants. Again, that's why her name is Bubbles. You have all these other great cast members, but it's really those two that make the movie. I adore watching them play off of each other.
That's going to be my number one pick. I won't have too much to add about it or what you said, but I definitely agree that there's the way the two female leads balance each other out is a wonder to watch. Today, we get so excited over a movie with one female lead. Here's a movie with two that are like equal weights and balancing each other out perfectly.
Love her choice of her name in that, being O'Brien.
Right, I was going to say, exactly. Well, Colleen, what is your number two?
My number two is another film I saw as a young person, being a lot older than you and Nora. I saw these when I was a teen. I saw How Green Was My Valley, and I was so touched by this film of miners in Wales and Maureen's portrayal of the character Anne Harrod that I wrote it down in my diary when I was probably like 10 or 11, that when I had a daughter, I was going to name her Anne Harrod. It didn't work out with my husband. I didn't realize I would have to confer with someone later on in life and have him agree to it.
Should have just done through. It anyway. Sorry, Nora. You should have just done it anyway.
I should have. It's such a beautiful name. I actually now work with a woman who our art teacher at my school is named that. And I've told her that story more times than she probably wants to hear, that I was going to name my daughter Anne Harrod. You know, Maureen's character in that is a rock in the family. I was lucky enough, it was TCM Film Festival 2014.
Yep.
When we saw Maureen O'Hara was there, I was on the red carpet that year. I had an essential pass and I stood there as she was brought down the red carpet, and I tell you, the lump in my throat, I still think it's there. And then I had the good fortune to get into the El Capitan to see her and Robert Osborne talk about How Green Was My Valley before getting to watch How Green Was My Valley with a bunch of my Twitter friends. We were in the first row of the balcony, and Maureen O'Hara, when she spoke, I don't know if you were there for that, Kristen. I imagine
I was. That was my first TCM Film Festival.
It was ours as well. And when Maureen blessed us, do you remember that? When she
I
said,
do.
I mean, really, that is got to be a life-changing moment for anyone who has watched her and loved her. And to have her come up there on the stage with Robert Osborne and say, I wish you all a good life and good old age. Or what did Nora, probably her memory's better than mine.
But
her
words, God's grace thing along those lines.
There wasn't a dry eye in our row. It was too much. That is definitely a top performance of Maureen O'Hara is one of my favorites.
I will say that TCM, that was my first festival. I got to see the intro for How Green Was My Valley, but because of some issues with the handicap seating, and I'm not blaming TCM, but TCM knows they were in the wrong there. I didn't stay. I ended up leaving at the same time they were bringing her out. And she had a bunch of bodyguards, obviously. She wasn't really able to interact with the audience, but she went right past. We were literally about a foot away from each other. So I feel like I got a little Maureen O'Hara magic near me. It's so great to see her, knowing that that was, I think, one of last appearances, not the last, but one of them. It was just amazing. You, me, I think the entire theater was sobbing just hearing her talk. Nora, what is your number two?
This is one of those serendipitous things where my mother's list and mine actually converge, because that is my number two as well, How Green Was My Valley. She encapsulated the reasons very well. But one thing I'll just add to what I love about that film is the way it has that gilded quality of memory. You know, somebody thinking back to when they were a little boy and all the people they knew who seemed larger than life. John Ford was one of those directors who could really make that framework of memory come alive so beautifully, and especially the way Maureen O'Hara is almost like a mythic figure, and you know, this local beauty who is not afraid of anybody, is not afraid to cut her own moral path in what is often a very judgmental small village, how she's not afraid to stand up to the elders and that final shot at the end when she's waving from the gate. That's the moment when we were watching it at the El Capitan. I was just like, oh. And yeah, that was the shot I know that TCM used as the last shot in their TCM Remembers tribute to her. And I just feel like that, if there's one moment I had, one shot to summarize the magic that she held and the kind of enchantment she had for the camera, you know, the dignity, the melancholy, the beauty, everything about her. I just love that shot and that performance.
I feel horrible admitting that I still have to see this movie. I have it in my possession. I just have not sat down to watch it. I have no good excuse, really. I need to see it.
You have something to look forward to. There's nothing wrong with that.
It goes up there with the myriad of other quintessential classic films that I probably should never admit that I haven't seen, but I will get to it eventually, I promise. Going forward in time, I'm going to 1961. My number two performance is The Parent Trap. I had to put a Disney movie on here. If anybody has listened as long as they have, they should know that I love Disney. And yet I haven't done a Disney-filled episode, which I probably should do at some point. But The Parent Trap is, to me, one of the most confusingly plotted movies ever, because I don't understand how anybody thinks it's logical. It's more logical, I think, in the 61 version than the 98 version. You have two parents played by Maureen O'Hara and Brian Keith, who we aren't really sure if they're married. They never really mention it. They explicitly mentioned that they were married in the 90s version. They have separated, and they've each kept one of their children, both played by Haley Mills. The two sisters reunite at camp and proceed to find a way to get their parents back together. Other than the fact that I spend an inordinate amount of time thinking these were horrible people for keeping their children separated for 13 years or however old the children are, Maureen O'Hara is really great in this movie. I've always said that she plays the mom roles in a way that's not demeaning to mothers. It's not like she's sitting at home baking cookies, wearing pearls or anything like that. She's scrappy. She's got a career. She's living this amazing life on her own without no man. Even when her and Brian Keith's character reunite and they have their little moment of romance, I'm not buying that he's any match for her. You know, she's the dominant figure in this movie. It's a really sweet kids movie. I think it's infectiously cute. The music and Haley Mills being as precocious as she is. As much as I enjoyed the 90s version, which I should have been the first incarnation of the movie that I saw, I have to say it's hard to beat Maureen O'Hara in this version. And as much as I love Natasha Richardson in the 98 version, Maureen O'Hara is the more personable one. She's so endearing, she's feisty, and it's a great role for her. And what could have been, I think, a very middling performance. I think if you had a lesser performer, she would have just faded into the background or just been there. You know, you just want them to be together because they're the parents. But when you watch her, you want them to be together because Brian Keith is lucky that a woman like Maureen O'Hara wants to be with him. That's great, watching her in The Parent Trap.
I remember seeing it as a kid and really loving just the family relationship. You say it perfectly in that it's a role that in the hands of a lesser performer could have just been phoned in, but she really makes the character feel unique, makes it feel like a real person.
Absolutely, I agree. Haley Mills playing both parts, the kids, does the Italian, you know, romantic dinner. Some of the expressions, you're right, Brian Keith, boy, why he ever like split up in the first place, I don't know. But
not understanding it at all.
Good choice. I love that movie. Good choice.
Colleen, what is your number one?
Well, as I hit on earlier when we first started talking, The Quiet Man was the first film I ever saw with Maureen O'Hara in it. And as I said, every St. Patrick's Day, we had to watch it. It was on the schedule along with the corned beef and cabbage was a viewing of The Quiet Man. We still do it. My husband, it's one of his favorite films. We pull it out on St. Patty's Day and she nails it, boy, as Irish feisty redhead. She's going to have her dowry or she's just not going to put up with anything. Whether it's the wind scene or that kiss in the rain, or the bicycle ride, the woolens, everything about what she wears and how she acts in that movie is fabulous. I'll never see it enough times. I love it.
The Quiet Man is one I saw just recently within the last year for the first time. Maureen O'Hara is one of those characters, a lot like Jean Tierney, who I think was born for color, because she just looks so ethereal, especially in that introduction to her character when John Wayne first sees her. She's an angel sent down from heaven. It's beautifully filmed. I say this about a lot of Maureen O'Hara's male characters. they fade to the background because she is a more dynamic presence. And this is John Wayne when he's not playing the Duke. As much as he's the lead of the movie, Maureen O'Hara's got the better plot.
She fades into the background whenever she's in a frame with him. Her red hair and her green little sweater.
The camo shanter.
Thank you. She's stealing the scene. She's excellent in color. He's in black and white. She's in color. You know?
Well, Nora, what is your number one?
My number one is Dance Girl Dance. And one thing I want to say about it that I don't think we've touched on yet, the reason why this is my number one choice for Maureen O'Hara is the speech she gives at the end of the film, without giving too many spoilers for people who haven't seen it, because I feel like it's one of those movies that is not as widely known as it should be. Maureen O'Hara gives this really epic speech at the end of the film that crystallizes everything you love about her character in this. It's a speech that really put the seal on the film's historical significance as a really feminist film, a really ahead of its time film. In her autobiography, Maureen O'Hara touched on this and said that she was proud to be associated with a film that had such longevity because of its message, which was very ahead of its time. I love it because it's a movie by a woman director, and it's really kind of about what women artists go through. You know, there's so many male artists in cinema who are temperamental and broody and misunderstood, but in Dance Girl Dance, it's about a woman artist, and so she doesn't really have the luxury of being moody and difficult. She has to be constantly making compromises to even make a living on her art, and the film really depicts that beautifully. And I think her character shows both the aspiration towards high art and also this acceptance of to earn money through things that she doesn't want to do. It's very poignant in that sense. It's just a really marvelous film that I hope everybody will see.
It's funny you brought that up, because I always say, after watching this, there's so many movies about young women in the entertainment industry, especially during the golden era. Watch this and then watch something like Ziegfeld Girl from 41. You get this nice duality of what women artists, especially since it's directed by a woman, were really going through. And then you have Ziegfeld Girl, which is still a fun movie, but it's pretty much like what a man thinks women are going through. So you have like the nice girl and then the one who has to die because she's a trollop. Whereas this, you don't really get those nice black and white characterizations. You get some beautiful shades of gray. And that's literal as well, because the movie is in black and white. I'm glad you brought that up. My number one is Bringing Christmas. It's 1947's Miracle on 34th Street. Much like The Parent Trap, this is a movie that I think, it with a weaker performer, the character probably wouldn't get first billing on the poster like Maureen O'Hara gets. This is George Seton's story about a precocious little girl played by Natalie Wood who does not believe in Santa Claus because her mother told her Santa doesn't exist. Edmund Gwenn's character is Santa, tries to convince her that he's real. That's the entire story. This is another movie that has a 90s remake that I think really misses the point of this movie. And Maureen O'Hara's character is single mother, raising a child, has a solid career, can provide her with an amazing house, works for the Macy's Corporation, just wants her child to be aware of the fact that life is not simple. And she takes that to extremes. Probably about as extreme as her character in The Parent Trap, separating her children for years on end. But in this case, there's more logic to it, and that she doesn't want her to grow up to be disappointed if things don't go her way. Maureen O'Hara has some adorable chemistry with Natalie Wood, and I think Natalie Wood, as much as I love Maureen O'Hara in this movie, Natalie Wood steals the show, mostly with her facial expressions, which are a masterclass in child acting. But Maureen O'Hara's character gets to be this nice, stable center. And you really watch this very subtle arc come through her as she starts to waffle and think that maybe she doesn't know everything. And maybe there is a little magic in the world. And maybe she is a bit too cynical. But it's not seen as we have to tear her down. We have to prove that her beliefs are meaningless. More of just this slow buildup and realization that, well, maybe she can't prove everything, which I think is really well written and wonderful to see. And I think if you had a different performer, you know, no offense to John Payne, but I'm not buying that Maureen O'Hara would have given him the time of day, because he seems like a lesser presence. You had more of a B-movie actress, you would have had somebody who wouldn't have been able to convey that arc as well.
I need to revisit it. It's been a really long time, and your discussion of it making me want to check it out again. I haven't seen it since I was a little girl. I think it's time to rediscover the magic.
You should. It's a very fun movie, and I was rewatching the 90s version a couple years ago, which has Mara Wilson, the 90s nut version of Natalie Wood. But, you know, no offense to Elizabeth Perkins, who plays the Maureen O'Hara character, but they have to give her more plot points to make the character interesting. You don't really need the gilding of the lily in the 47 version, because Maureen O'Hara just sells it, which is why a lot of classic actors had a harder time, because they're working 20 times harder to convey what's not on the page, a testament to their fantastic acting. Ladies, any honorable mentions that we didn't bring up that you guys wanted to recommend?
I have one, just because of the unusualness of the role that Maureen O'Hara plays, without giving too much away about it, and that is The Fallen Sparrow, which is a very dark movie. It's a drama starring John Garfield, who is prisoner of war escapee, who comes back to the United States during World War II, but is tracked down by Nazi agents because he has something that they want. And Maureen O'Hara plays a very ambiguous character in it, and it's interesting to see her in what is arguably the most noirish film she made. That's one that I think doesn't get talked about too much, The Fallen Sparrow. And one other that I just discovered like a few days ago, preparation for this, oh, I'm going to watch some Maureen O'Hara movies. And that's a movie called Britannia Muse. In the U.S., I think it was marketed as The Forbidden Street, although the novel is called Britannia Muse, and that's what I think it was marketed as in England. And she plays this very unlikable role of this society belle who marries beneath her and goes to live in this slum. And the movie doesn't really make it clear whether she kills her husband or not, but he ends up dead, and she is being blackmailed by this really unpleasant slum woman who wants to keep her there and torment her, and yet also proclaims that she loves her like a daughter. It's this really bizarre, gaslit London melodrama that I hadn't heard of before. It's very strange.
I need to see that. That sounds awesome. Colleen, yeah. What about you? Any honorable mentions?
You know, I think you guys both hit on some that would have been my honorable mentions. Definitely The Parent Trap, and actually the other one, Miracle on 34th Street. I showed it, as Nora said, she saw it as a child. She wasn't really that into it. I really like that movie. Now that you've given it your seal of approval as your number one, I'm hoping to get her to give it another chance.
Yay! Sticking with the 60s, Maureen O'Hara, which I think the roles were necessarily as well-rounded as the 60s would progress, and she only did a handful of movies beyond that. But McClintock, another movie with her and John Wayne. I hate the ending. I hate the ending because it's humiliating to her character, but great to watch them play off of each other. Of course, John Wayne is in full Duke mode. It's a weird little domestic drama that just happens to be set on the West, and they're a married couple. They hate each other. And did I mention I hate the ending? I hate the end. They have, again, really good chemistry. It's obvious why they've made so many movies together. And another one I recommend is Mr. Hobbs Takes a Vacation. This is a fun one for me because it's a movie that not only do I enjoy Maureen O'Hara in, but it made me appreciate James Stewart a bit more, who I had always found to be a little one note. But here it's a typical guy tries to go on vacation story with his wife and family, and ends up having a nightmare of a time. It's directed by Henry Koster, who did The Bishop's Wife and a bunch of other feel-good movies. And not only is James Stewart just off the cuff, hilariously flippant and rude the entire film, you have Maureen O'Hara trying to play this stabilizing influence and trying to convince him to like calm down, deal with things, and he's just not having it. And it's also got Fabian in a role. So if you really want a nice encapsulation of the 60s, you should check it out. It's a very funny movie that takes some unique turns. Listeners, let me know your thoughts on Maureen O'Hara. Send your top three list movies that you think are her best, her worst, ones we should have talked about. You can email your thoughts to me at ticklishbiz@gmail.com, and I'll read them on the next episode. Once again, I'd like to thank the lovely pair of Colleen and Nora. Ladies, where can listeners find and get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Fussy at Mid Parent, And I'd love to talk about movies on Twitter. So that's where you can find me.
I'm also on Twitter. I'm at Nitrate Diva. I also blog at nitratediva.wordpress.com.
That'll close out this edition of Ticklish Business. You can listen to Ticklish Business a variety of ways, either directly at ticklishbusiness.podbean.com, via Stitcher Radio, or on iTunes. If you are listening via iTunes, please consider leaving a rating and review. Nothing less than 5 stars will do. I did not mean for that to rhyme. As always, you can contact me directly at ticklishbiz, that's B-I-Z, at gmail.com, or visit me at my official website, where I discuss classic films regularly, journeysinclassicfilm.com. The podcast is also on Twitter at ticklish_biz. Want to listen to episodes early or have me review your favorite film? Then consider supporting Ticklish Business via Patreon. I have a wealth of amazing perks, and all your donations go right back into making Ticklish Business the premier classic film podcast. If you're interested in learning more or becoming a patron, just head over to patreon.com/ticklishbiz. Next time, I'm tickling your funny bone with special guest Adam Kautzer as we talk about the work of director Prejes and his 1944 comedy, The Miracle of Morgan's Creek. Till next time.